After 4 years of covering the Clinton State Department, veteran BBC correspondent Kim Gaddis trailed the U.S. Secretary of State that logged the most travel miles in U.S. history. She wrote a book, The Secretary, A Journey with Hillary Clinton from Beirut to the Heart of American Power, back in 2013. And since September 2014, as Gaddis watched Clinton make the transition back to the campaign trail, she hit the trail herself, shadowing the candidate for the BBC, a journey from Iowa to Hillary Clinton's intended destination, back to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Going into the election season already last year, before the primaries started, it was very interesting for me to make that transition from observing Hillary Clinton as a Secretary of State to watching her as a politician at rallies, at political events, and watch her transition back into the world of politics after the very sort of bitter campaign she waged on the presidential trail with President Obama in 2008. I don't think it was always that easy for her to find the right tone, the right demeanor. She is, as she has said herself, not necessarily a natural politician. I always say that she's more of a public servant than a politician, but obviously you have to campaign to get the job. It's also been very interesting for me to watch not just the Democratic race, but the race in general. You know, I wrote a piece for Foreign Policy magazine to talk about how watching this election unfold reminds me of politics in the Middle East, because you have the demagoguery of candidates like Donald Trump. You have the invocations of God that Ted Cruz resorts to often. It's very common in the region that I come from, the Middle East. He invoked God and the glory of God when he won Iowa and he took to the stage.
To God be the glory.
That sounds like English for Allahu Akbar, which is not just a rallying cry for jihadist militants. It's the equivalent of praise the Lord. People use it out of joy as well. So all in all, it's been a very interesting new aspect of my career covering this campaign trail, because I've really only covered the Middle East before and international affairs.
Did you predict Trump's rise? Did you sense that there was this ambient anger within the electorate that was looking for a home?
Well, I won't pretend that I predicted what so many pollsters and candidates within the establishment failed to see. But at some point at the end of last year, or at the very beginning of this year, I wrote a piece comparing and contrasting Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, because it was clear that there was something afoot, and that on the far left and the far right, there was real discontent and a search for something different, a voice that said things that hadn't been said before, a sense that the economy wasn't working yet for everybody, even though there has been great progress made. But I also had an interesting conversation in July of last year with the Clinton aide, who told me at the time that they saw this unfold. They saw Bernie Sanders as a potential serious challenge, and certainly at the beginning of the race. So already back in the summer of last year, I was hearing from the campaign that they expected they could possibly lose Iowa and New Hampshire, but that unlike 2008, they were ready for the long game. So she lost Iowa in 2008, but they didn't have a plan for what came after. And this time they came prepared. They were hoping they wouldn't have a tough race at the beginning in Iowa and New Hampshire. They were hoping that it would be a cakewalk for her, probably. But it has been a challenge, but their playbook has mostly delivered. So she won Iowa by a razor-thin margin, then she lost New Hampshire big, but then she went on to win in those firewall states that they had predicted would help her gain the momentum again.
Do you think that the primary process and the extended timing that the U.S. election requires bears on these dramas that can develop? Say, for example, Ted Cruz versus Donald Trump, which in Britain would be over in a matter of weeks.
You know, this is a huge country. This is not Britain. This is not my tiny Lebanon. This is not Canada. And I have often wondered, why does it take so long? And I'm sure some of the candidates, including Hillary Clinton, ask themselves that question as well. You know, it is one of the most grueling, time-consuming, tiring, exhausting thing to be on the campaign trail. But as I went from state to state, from Iowa to New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, Florida. You know, I would meet voters at political rallies who were coming to listen to the candidates because they were still undecided a day before the primary in their state. They wanted to see the candidate. They wanted to hear them speak. They wanted to almost touch them, to make up their mind a day before the vote. So if you want to replicate that across the country, you simply can't do it within a couple of months the way it's done in the UK or in other countries. It does mean that there's a lot of drama that can unfold. Candidates who are at the top of the polls a year before can completely drop off the face of the campaign, as we've seen with Jeb Bush, for example, who was supposed to be the favorite, and he's gone.
And money can't buy you love in 2016. That is for sure.
Well, but it can buy you a sustained effort to continue to woo voters, and that's what Bernie Sanders is benefiting from. He has such a huge grassroots backing, he has such amazing online fundraising that it is sustaining him, and it is a phenomenal campaign that he's been running, energizing young voters. Of course, the Clinton campaign likes to push back on the whole issue of the enthusiasm gap and says, you know, look, he can fill up big auditoriums and gather thousands of people to his rallies, but at the end of the day, she's getting the votes. She is ahead of him by about 2.5 million votes. He can't catch up really with the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton with superdelegates, although again, he would like to try to convince those superdelegates to switch sides if he gets a majority of pledged delegates. And so he can stay in the race until, you know, the last primaries in June.
Two things, and you've alluded to one of them at least. I mean, America has a very divided electorate at this stage. And you see it certainly in the style in which the Republicans are operating versus the Democrats. I mean, surely there's a legitimate division between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, but yet there's something very polite and thoughtful and mm-hmm. issue-oriented about the Democrats, whereas the Republicans couldn't be more different. It's all rhetorical. What do you think that's going to mean once we get to the general election?
You know, there was a very interesting email in the thousands of emails that were made public from the Hillary Clinton correspondence at the State Department, where she basically says primaries appeal to the extremes, to the people on the extremes, particularly in the Republican Party. I've spoken to her pollster, Joel Benenson, and he said, look, you cannot extrapolate what you're seeing happen in the Republican primaries to the general election. There are a lot of people who are rightfully disappointed, angry, upset, who feel left out. But as, you know, some pundits and pollsters have been saying, there aren't enough angry white men to carry someone like Donald Trump to the White House. They will have to find a way to appeal to a more diverse, broad electorate. And so far, that hasn't happened. The polls show African Americans, Hispanic voters are very much opposed to Donald Trump in huge numbers. Now we're seeing polls about women overwhelmingly rejecting Donald Trump by 65%, if I'm not mistaken. Millennials are also very much against Donald Trump. All of those factors put any Democratic candidate at an advantage in the general election in November. The Democrats already start with several points of an advantage in a general election. And what you're seeing play out, I think, on the Republican side is very much an intra-Republican fight. It is not necessarily representative of the bigger mood in the country.
Kim Gattis, BBC correspondent covering Hillary Clinton's campaign and author of The Secretary, A Journey with Hillary Clinton from Beirut to the Heart of American Power. Kim, thanks so much.
Always great to be on.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.